Hey, this is the part of the show where we giggle because our theme music has started, and I am so excited to welcome you all to the Aging Well Together show. We always have great shows, and I know today is going to be just a really, really helpful show today. Ooh, we have a little background music still. I'm going to turn it down even more. I know, it's not bad. We don't normally have, what would we call that, under music? There's a term, but I was like, wait, I'm still...
She's getting good. She's
got I'm still
noise box.
Oh, I know. I didn't pull the noise box out. I'll pull it out in a second. They don't even know what they've gotten themselves into. We are so excited. Today, we have the leaders of the Duke Dementia Family Support Program, a program I have admired for more than 20 years now. We have Natalie Leary and Bobby Matcher here to tell us all about the programs and support for both caregivers and people living with dementia in our area. I am so excited for all we will learn together, and I really have admired this program for so long. So I'm excited to share all of that with you through our guests. But as always, before we dive into our show, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM. If you're within a few miles of us or a mile of us in Carrboro, but I know most folks are listening to us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and expert guests on the show, and I've been emailing with the team, we're lining up a lot of great shows coming up this spring. So besides being them just amazing experts and sponsors for the show, Marilyn over there at the Department on Aging is wonderful about posting all of our shows on the Orange County Department on Aging's website. So if you want to catch up on any of our 67 past shows, today is 68.
Where's that noise box?
I'll get the noise box off. And all right, hold on. I don't think I can reach it. Hold on. Let's see.
Hey, this is live radio. You can do anything. People are walking by and people are seeing and they're smiling at you.
All right.
Now you say it again.
Poor Bobby and Natalie don't realize this is our third show with the noise box, which...
We like that.
What's
the number?
This is our 68th show, but this started three shows ago. So for a year and a half, Alicia and I kept being like, we need a sound machine. And so with one of my holiday gift cards, I bought this ridiculous machine. So many sounds that are useless, but Alicia and I are having a lot of fun with our... So speaking of... Okay, this is a bad transition. Speaking of boxes where you can get information, I'm looking at Alicia. If you want to get information on your computer, see, there you go. If you want to listen to any of our past shows, our podcasts, you can go to the Orange County website. It's also an amazing place to get local resources all about services and support in Orange County. And the Orange County Department on Aging website is www.orangecountync.gov/aging, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. And if you have questions about any local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. I'm already giggling because our guests are starting selfies. See, they're really getting into it. This is so fun, right? I warned them. I prepared them how fun and easygoing the show is. And yes, selfies welcome. I like that it's a radio show, though. We really do need to start filming us on it, like not a TV show, but there are other DJs that do like Facebook Live about
it. Just because
we're fabulous and adorable, and our guests are fabulous and brilliant, and everyone should see them. Mm-hmm. All right, so go to the Orange County Department on Aging if you need any resources. If you want to do suggestions for any shows, and wow, are they filling up. I am so excited, but feel free to email me. You can reach me at a long email address, and it's all one smushed word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. I'm not sure whether you all emailed that or another one of our I have 6 emails, but I don't know whether Bobby reached out or Natalie. I don't even know which one, but on one of my 6 emails, for those who know me also professionally and personally, just send an email and would love to fit you into the show. You heard just a quick moment of music, or as I call it. Oh, wait, hold on. No. Oh, wait, that's the gun one. Hold on. No. See, that's the best. These are so lame. By next show, we'll be done with this. That's their music one. But anyway, much better music comes from the Robert Bradford Quartet. Thank you so much for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. You'll hear more of their original song, Mayfly, at the end of the show. And we love them because they're a local Carborough bass band, mm-hmm. and we so appreciate them. Last year around this time, they came and did a live concert for the Aging Well Together show. Right. I don't know what episode number it is, but go on the Aging Well Together show if you want to learn about those folks. And as always, my fantastic cohort, co-host, who I admire so much, who's just rushing in from one of her many volunteer activities and civic engagement for our county, Alicia Reed. Welcome back, friend.
Hey, I'm the man, Ed McMahon. You may remember this.
We do know Ed McMahon.
I told that story that I didn't need to be, mean to be age shaming, but we did have a quite a young guest, young being 20s, recently, who had no idea who Johnny Carson or Ed McMahon was. And so when Alicia said, "I'm Heather's Ed McMahon," it was like crickets. He's like, and we're like, "Johnny Carson," nothing. Crickets. So we tried not to age shame, but right. That was funny. All right. I would like to be done with me because I want to turn it over to our guest. But me, I know I am Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members. And at 54, I'm very invested in how we are all aging well together. And I love the resources of our group that's joining us today. And so I am super excited to now turn it over to our guests. All right. So we're joined by the leaders of the Duke Dementia Family Support Program. As I said, this is a program I've admired for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. We have Natalie Leary, the director, and Bobby Matcher, who was the former director. I don't know that language. Bobby used to be the director, and now she is the senior advisor to the program. Welcome, Bobby. Welcome. And Natalie. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is great to have you both here. There is so much we want to learn and hear about. But as always, as I warned you just a few minutes ago, before we get into the program, we'd love to hear a little bit about each of you, where you're from, what brought you into. Both of you are social workers by training. What got you excited about dementia and dementia support? So, Bobby, I will start with you and you can bring the microphone a little bit closer. I feel like it's far away and we want to hear you.
Well, thanks so much for having us today. I can now check off on my bucket list that I've been on a radio show.
Yay!
As Heather said, I was the director of the Duke Dementia Family Support Program, and I stepped down at the end of 2024, turned the reins over to Natalie, who is amazing. But working at the Duke Dementia Family Support Program since 2011 has really been the highlight of my career. I've been in social work since 1980.
Wow.
And have had a variety of different positions. I somewhat accidentally ended up getting jobs in aging, and I just kind of liked it. And then this job opened up at Duke, and it's been my dream job, and I've really, really enjoyed working with my colleagues at the program and with the families who use our services.
And I was thinking, when we first met, I feel like you were finishing up a graduate program.
You are right.
And I'm not sure which of you, because I know you have a few of them, but I was like, I have watched Bobby. This was, I don't even know, over 10, 15 years ago. Which program, which of your initials was that?
That was my MHA. Mm-hmm. Right out of college, I got my MSW at Hunter College in New York. Oh. And then for some reason, in my mid-50s, I decided to get an MHA and went to UNC School of Public Health. and finished my MHA there. And I feel like I've used both the degrees, but I am definitely a social worker in my heart.
And tell our listeners we have fun with initials, even though I know, because it's from the Department of Public Health where I have my degrees, but I have different initials. What does MHA stand for?
MHA is a Master's in Healthcare Administration.
So you and I met, and then I knew you were doing your internship, and then all of a sudden it turned into a thing, and I know you got to work with the wonderful, amazing Lisa Quaither, who, her name has come up a few times on this show with love and respect, so.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why this was my dream job.
I am so happy, and I'm so happy to see our paths, like, just they keep crossing.
Yes.
Okay, so Natalie, you are newer to this world, but not... Okay, not new to the world. Okay.
Not new to the world.
I do the best segues. You can tell I'm not a social worker by training, so I don't always do the best words. Tell us about your background.
Absolutely. So when I went to undergrad, I'm from North Carolina, so I'm a native of North Carolina. In undergrad, I thought that I would be teaching school. So
Me too.
Did you?
Yes. Okay. How'd that work out for you? I'm not in the classroom right now.
Me either. But we are teaching, aren't we?
We are educators.
That's right.
I just said goodbye to high school students and didn't. What was your teaching age group?
I was thinking more elementary.
Nice.
So my undergrad was in child development, and after graduation, you know, that second semester of your senior year when it's all about finished, and I realized I don't think this is it, but persevered. Did it, finished it. I'm grateful that I did. But then certainly had a period where I was unsure what I would be doing. And I had a friend who was starting at UNC, pursuing her master's in social work. And part of their orientation was taking a tour of the various ways that social workers are helpful, sort of expanding the reach. These are the populations that are served by social work. And they actually went downtown Durham to the Durham Center for Senior Life.
Nice.
And there were a group of cheerleaders, some of the older adult cheerleaders that were there.
Was it the Jammers?
Yes, the Jammers were there.
I love them.
Yeah. So she left that tour and she said, I just found where you belong, because she knew that working with older adults, it's been something that I was uncomfortable with, very comfortable. It was a space I enjoyed. My parents served as caregivers to both of my both of my grandmothers in various times, lived with us. So I saw that was normal, that was comfortable. And I also noticed the lack of resources that they had in the community where we were from. And so putting all of that together, her vote of confidence that I found where you're heading, I applied to grad school, and here we are today.
I love so many things. So Bobby and I go back over a decade. You and I have been best friends for, what, like 5 minutes
now? But it's been the best 5 minutes.
It's been the best 5 minutes, and we have so much in common. You learned quicker. I actually graduated college and realized it a few months after. Oh, my gosh, I did all of my education to be a high school social studies teacher, and I don't want to do that. And then was volunteering at a hospital. I think I've said this story before, and I don't know this woman's name. All I remember, she was the hospital social worker, and I said, where can I find joy in helping people? And it was a little bit of a longer conversation. I gave a few suggestions of places, and she goes, no, you want joy, you work with older adults. Work. And I've never looked back, and I have no idea. All I know is she was a social worker, and she, just like you, just someone said it at the right time when I was open to it, and it just... got me on a path.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And maybe you had never thought about it, right? So they brought it to your attention in some way.
I actually am so humble. No, I am so over, I don't know the word. I'm awesome, I guess is what I'm saying. No, I actually knew as a teenager.
Okay.
I worked at a retirement community from 14 to 17. So I actually went back and said, do you mean I knew what I wanted to do at 16 and then sort of pushed it down? So I was looking for that, like, overachieving or whatever.
Right.
That was also my funny, humble thing. But no, I was like, wait a second. I was in that environment growing up and close with grandparents, but I just hadn't thought about it as a career. So people say they change. I don't. I think I had it all together at 15 or 16 and I've been trying to get it back since for the last 40 years. All right. So we're going to kind of keep diving in and I'm sure find other ways to marry your personal experiences and your professional experiences, because I know we all work in similar fields and it's hard to make those distinctions because it all gets so personal. But why don't we start? Natalie, can you give us an overview of the Duke Dementia Family Support Program for those who haven't already been admiring it for so many decades.
To our new fans.
To our new fans.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So our program, the Duke Dementia Family Support Program, was founded in 1980 by Lisa Gwyther, whose name has already been mentioned today.
Love you, Lisa, if you're listening.
When Lisa founded the program, you know, there were not a lot of spaces or resources available. Folks weren't really talking about dementia, about changes in memory and thinking the way that we are today. And so for Lisa at that time, it was important to have support and education available for folks to be able to connect people. And fast forward 45 years later,
I mean, gosh.
That is
literally 45 years later.
Absolutely.
I'm doing that math.
Yeah, it's easy math on the 45. So fast forward to where we are today. It continues to be two of the pillars of the work that we do are support and education. So for us, support, education, and engagement, mm-hmm. it's really how we think about the programs and services that we are providing. Support and education might happen in a one-on-one conversation or more of a consult where folks can say, these are the specific things that we are thinking about, that mm-hmm. we're concerned about, that we're dealing with. It might come in a group setting. We offer a variety of support groups. Folks, that would be a way for folks to connect. And education, we offer a monthly educational webinar series called Caregiver Connections, where each month there's a different topic that's important for folks. It might be helpful for folks who are caring for or supporting someone with changes in memory and thinking. And then our third pillar is around engagement. So engagement is, let's come together. Maybe we're not going to talk about memory and thinking, but we're going to be together doing something fun, like mm-hmm. an art program or maybe something around music. But we're going to do something that's fun and engaging, and we're in a safe space. So it doesn't matter how we respond to questions or if stories are repeated, but we're just enjoying being together. So those are sort of the principles that we use to guide the work that we do. And I also think it's important for us to remind folks that no connection with Duke Health is required.
So yes, that's yeah. important, because like I'm sorry, right down the street from UNC, and so I that's have right. always loved that you open your doors and will support any, no matter what color blue they wear.
Exactly. I always say it doesn't matter which
or
basketball
red,
team.
Right? Wolfpack or, yeah.
Okay. Is this where Wolfpack is where your allegiance oh, lies? Okay.
No, I'm just looking at my friend. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yes, no affiliation with Duke Health required, and there's no cost for the services that we provide.
That's important. Thank you. I was going to ask about that. We have highlighted on the show, there's lots of, I love our area because there are different opportunities for support mm-hmm. and education and engagement in different ways from different kinds of support groups mm-hmm. around the Triangle. How is the Duke Dementia Program different yeah. than some of the other programs? And how do you work with some of the other programs?
Yeah. Well, I would say we are fortunate in the Triangle to have a variety of organizations who are working with folks who are caring for someone with memory change. And we value those partnerships with those organizations. So one, I think it's we work to maintain communication between some of those partners to say, what are programs and services that you are offering? We sort of promote the programs and services mm-hmm. of each other, because we understand it's going to really take a village.
Yes,
right?
And we had Tipa Snow and her team on, yeah. and they came on, and clearly the Orange County Department on Aging and the programs they have. So, yeah. I mean, the more the merrier.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think about, okay, if you need this, go to this group? Like for a while there, I looked at your program at Duke as having the most options around support groups, for
yes.
example. So mm-hmm. I would suggest that. And then I'd say, you know, if they're in Orange County, you can get free counseling support. But, you know, so anyway, I try to work on that too. Think about all the different, I mean, people
Absolutely.
Need help every day. And so. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think that's part of what I appreciate about the work that we do, is that it really is a tailored approach. So when folks reach out, they're not going to get the same list of resources that everyone gets. It really is, okay,
people
what?
People hate that.
Yeah. Well, that's a Google search, right?
That's a Google search. When I work with families, literally was working with a family 2 hours ago, and yeah, two choices. If they want a choice, two choices, three choices. Sometimes
right.
it's, hey, I met with you. This is what you need. Because they're like, help me make sense of
That's
it.
Right. That's right. And it sometimes is, what is it that you exactly need right now? And if we were to give you everything and it wasn't time for that, then it would just be overwhelming and too much.
Yeah.
And so through those conversations, we are able to see, okay, I know it feels like you need all of the information, all of the knowledge, but this might be the helpful place to start. So I think one of the things that makes us unique is having the space to really say, let's look at you,
mm-hmm.
learn about you, learn about your family, see what's important, and then go from there. And it doesn't have to be a one-time relationship. So as you're navigating this throughout the trajectory, reach back out. Let's touch base again and see what you need.
Well, and I'll turn to Bobby now,
sure.
And I was going to ask a question, and so I'm going to ask two questions in one, because I did do a little bit of stalking last night. Otherwise, I'm good at stalking, otherwise known as research. But I was looking at your website, and I noticed this plethora of amazing team members. And Bobby, you know much more about the history because you've been there. I wanted to ask you about the support for family over 40 years and how you see the landscape of dementia care changing in our area. But even the landscape, tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like you have even more staff helping out now. There seems to be more people, even with the Duke Dementia team.
We do. When I joined in 2011, we were two social workers.
That's what I remember.
Right.
Because I was going to stop the picture. Like, yep. There's your beautiful pictures. And I was like, there's Natalie, there's Bobby. Okay. Oh, and it just kept going. Five or six more people.
Yep. For the first 30 plus years, there were two social workers. Mm. And so we have grown tremendously, and not only in terms of staff and the number of people we serve, but in the variety of services that we offer. And I think, I'm going to lead into, I think, the question about how dementia has changed. And one of the ways is that there are more services now. When the famous Lisa Gwaither started the program in 1980, there were very few mm-hmm. services. Lisa started the first dementia support group in North Carolina in 1980.
Wow.
And now there are a wide variety of support groups through our program, but also through many other programs. So there's a lot more support for caregivers. There are more adult day programs. There are more options for respite care.
Mm-hmm.
There are more options for education today than there were years ago. And in part, that's because, you know, there's increased awareness. In 1980, people weren't really talking mm-hmm. about dementia too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of people talking about Alzheimer's the way people talked about cancer when I was a kid. You know, he has the big C.
Yes. And they didn't even use the term.
Right.
I remember with a family member, there's a little senility going
yes.
on. They use senile and senility.
Yep.
I didn't even
yeah.
hear the word dementia, I think, until it was educational, when
yeah.
we're in school.
That is right. And the Alzheimer's Association wasn't founded until 1980. And over the years, they and many other organizations have helped increase public awareness of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, and that they're not a normal part of aging. And there have been huge strides in terms of progress. It used to be that a doctor would look at a person and talk to the person and try to make a diagnosis, but now there are many advanced mm-hmm. diagnostic tools. We hear about PET scans and MRIs
mm-hmm.
and biomarkers. They're working on blood tests. There are various cognitive assessments. And so now people can get diagnosed earlier and more accurately than they used to be able to.
Mm-hmm.
You probably heard them people say, well, the only way to know if someone has Alzheimer's is to do an autopsy.
That's how it was for a while. When I first started learning about it, they said we can't confirm the diagnosis till after death.
Right.
And now?
It has changed tremendously. And along with that, there have been strides in terms of pharmaceuticals. There were no... When I was growing up, there were no drugs used for anybody with
mm-hmm.
senility or dementia
mm-hmm.
or Alzheimer's disease. But then drugs didn't start till the 1990s. You may have heard of medicines like Aricept and Namenda.
We were just talking about that a few hours ago for one
yeah.
of my clients. Yeah.
Those are the two, commonly prescribed drugs. But Aricept wasn't approved by the FDA until the mid-1990s. And Namenda wasn't until 2003.
Mm.
So those are really recent.
Mm-hmm.
And then there have been some more recent breakthroughs. And I am a social worker. I'm not a pharmacist. I'm not a physician. So that's not my area of expertise, but there are some, you know, new drugs that are looking very promising in slowing down the progression right now. There are a couple of drugs that are being offered via infusion.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is lecanemab, also known as Leqembi, and the other mm-hmm. is what, donanemab.
I don't know, but we did have in June around Brain Health Month, we had three shows in a row around brain health, mm-hmm. and we had neurologists on, and mm-hmm. your colleagues, part of the Duke UNC Alzheimer's uh-huh. Disease Research Center, and they were saying that because of all of these new advances, the run on neurology visits, because it used yeah. to be there wasn't much you can do, but now there are some things and things that people actually want to do earlier on in the right. disease. But the neurologists weren't prepared to have all of the, and primary care is not prepared no. for it, to have all these people that now, people who are avoiding assessments and screens actually now want it, because if they're eligible for these name medications, mm-hmm. I can't pronounce.
Yeah, you're right, because the drugs that are administered via infusions have to be used very early in the disease process.
Yes.
They're only right now approved for Alzheimer's disease, but people have to get them very early, otherwise they're not useful. And we actually started a 6-month group, support group for people getting Leqembi, because there were so many people asking questions, and they're, even though they're already getting the infusions, and their family members had questions. So we have started a 6-month Leqembi group.
That's a great, I know we want to mm-hmm. link to talk more about the support groups, but mm-hmm. I do wonder how do you work with your Duke colleagues when you get these real kind of more medical pharmaceutical yeah. questions? How does that work with your team?
Well, the Leqembi group is a great example of good relationships that we have with the providers at Duke and elsewhere. But for the Leqembi group, Janelle McNeil, one of the other social workers, and I co-facilitate that. But we start that group once a month with an educational piece that's offered by Daniel Parker, who's one of the medical providers mm-hmm. at the Duke Memory Disorders Clinic. He and one of the nurses, Erin, from the infusion clinic, come to this support group so they can talk about the basics of these new drugs and, you know, other treatments, and, you know, because I can't answer, Janelle can't answer those questions. But, you know, we have great relationships with all of the neurology providers in the dementia world, particularly at Duke and UNC, and many of them, you know, give talks for our groups, for our webinars on a regular basis.
Oh, that's great. We should compare our guests, and, yeah. and that way you take a look and say, okay, now you yeah. need this one or yep. this one. And this issue of the support that you provide, and I want to mm-hmm. talk about the support groups, and we had done a little bit of prep, and, mm-hmm. and so being able to share information about the support groups, but I love your responsiveness and proactiveness mm-hmm. of saying, hey, here's an issue, mm-hmm. let's start a new support group. Like, what is that process of your, how you decide what are your, well, first, what are your existing support groups, and how do you say, okay, now there's, we're getting enough individual conversations about this, let's yeah. bring yeah. everyone together.
Well, that's kind of like how we roll in our program. Mm-hmm. We listen to the families that we work with, and we hear what they need and what they want. So when I came to Duke, we had 3 support groups. We now have 13.
The last time, FYI, I'm interrupting you, because the last time that I got an update was before the pandemic, so it was 6 years ago, and there were like 4 yeah. that I heard about. So yeah. you've gone from 4 to 13 in like 6 years.
Right. Well, you know, the daughters concern for aging relatives has been around for 20 plus years. Our morning caregiver support group has been around forever, and our evening group has been around for many years. Some of the newer groups include a younger onset support group. Younger onset meaning people who are diagnosed with dementia before the age of 65.
Mm-hmm.
So that started because a couple doing one of our other programs, Memory Makers, which I'll talk about later, they were in their 50s, and one of the partners has dementia, and they wanted to be in a group with people who were younger like them.
Yes.
So we have a support group, sadly, it is a thriving support group, which is kind of sad, for people in their 40s, 50s, and early 60s who are living with dementia.
I knew about the 50s and 60s. The 40s is interesting. And I know from some of my younger clients and their spouses, it's just, it's a different, I'll talk about the support group I'm thinking about starting a few days ago. I was thinking about it, so I'll tell you what I'm seeing also. But so, wow, all right, so then that's another one.
Yeah, and that has sort of two branches. One that Natalie now facilitates, that I really miss facilitating, for the care partners of people with younger onset. And then at the same time, Janelle is facilitating a group for people living themselves with younger onset dementia.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another group that is specifically for people living with dementia, not necessarily younger, of all ages.
Mm-hmm.
We have an African-American caregiver support group that we started a couple of years ago.
I saw that last night. It's Black History Month, and I noticed that on your website, because for my Serious Illness Coalition, and we're doing some special programs, and I just saw that. That's really cool.
Yeah, and we started that because James, one of the caregivers who we've worked with for years, said he wanted to be in a support group with people who looked like him.
Mm-hmm.
So we started a support group. Tiffany, who is a social worker who worked full-time on our team and now works part-time, facilitates that group along with a volunteer and does a great job. And we occasionally have speakers at that group, and they generally are from the African-American community. And that group is thriving. And again, it's meeting a need that somebody brought to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of years ago, Natalie started a long-term care support group. And that is for people who have loved ones living in a long-term care facility.
Oh, good to know.
And that was in November of 2020, right? So if we think back to November of 2020, what was going on in the world?
And yes, the pandemic.
Yes.
And
we were approaching the first holiday season without, where there was not as much access to our loved ones in that setting.
Oh, interesting. So, okay, any other support groups?
Yes,
I feel like there's more. I didn't count, but I don't feel like we're at 13 yet.
We can't forget what I feel like is my baby. It's called Memory Makers. It's an early stage educational memory early stage memory loss educational support group. So it's for people living with memory loss who are early stage, not early onset or younger onset, but early in the disease. And it is a six-week program. We meet for 2.5 hours for six consecutive weeks with people living with early stage memory loss and their care partners.
Mm-hmm.
Often they're married couples. Sometimes it's an adult child and a parent. It could be two friends. And that program has an educational piece. We bring in speakers each week. There's a different expert, a physician one time, an elder law attorney one time, an occupational therapist one time. I talk about disclosure one week. Another social worker talks about communication one week. And a neuropsychologist talks about safety issues. So we have great variety of topics. And that has sort of become an entry point, a portal for families into what has sort of accidentally grown into an early stage community where people come together.
Am I remembering correctly? I feel like there was a term insights and a group insights many years ago. I don't know if it was through Duke, but it just the concept of people who were early on and they had insight into the changes that were happening.
No.
Do you remember that, or am I?
I don't, but I love that name.
It was, and I feel like I learned it through, you know, another shout out to my Orange County Department on Aging friends. And I remember hearing about a program through them, and I don't know whether they offered it, but I like that concept of they had insight with what was happening.
Yeah.
And I was with a gentleman earlier today that's kind of moving through the process, but he had insight. He was like, because he said, I know I have to take that memory medicine because I just can't find what I'm trying to say easy enough. So he had some insights into what's going on. I was going to ask another question I'm going to go back to something you said earlier about this growing awareness. I know we went into support groups, but the growing awareness of dementia and the needs of folks living with dementia and brain change and their care partners, their spouses, their adult children. The fact that you had so many people working now in a great way also to me shows a raise in investment or an increased investment and funding. Hmm. Because I know you love what you do, but I'm sure there's also payment to, like, just to me, that also shows another change that you see a lot more investment, that you can have more than two people, that you have the support now and the capacity to have 13 support groups. So I don't know who gets the love. I don't know whether Duke themselves get the love, or I know Lisa was wonderful about bringing in. I remember 1 year she brought in a really big grant and I was like, way to go, Lisa.
Yeah, you know, we are certainly supported in a lot of ways by Duke, but largely our budget is funded through the generosity of folks who have worked with our program. 64% of our annual operating budget is through philanthropy and through those kind and generous gifts that folks make to us. That's really what sustains us.
That's good to know. I didn't know. If you had asked me, I thought, it was research funding or the university. That's really impressive. Yeah. So, all right, so then switching from support groups to other kinds of support you offer, and I know one of the words that people hear and they don't quite know what it means is this concept of respite.
Yeah.
And I know as a caregiver myself, I wanted respite, but sometimes there's more formalized program, and I know that one of the things we wanted to talk about was the Project CARE.
Yeah.
So do you want to, and I see it, I also have a legislative world, and it's on all aging-related organizations, listeners, are coming out with their 2025, 2026 General Assembly legislative priorities, and Project CARE is all over it to keep funding.
That's
so
right.
What is Project CARE?
Yeah, so Project CARE is a state-funded program. So it is sort of a piece of the pie of the work that we do, but Project CARE is available in all 100 counties. Mm-hmm. We are the central team for Project CARE. We have 19 counties in our purview, but it is available across the state.
That's a lot of counties, because normally in our area, it's like a 7-county, what used to be Triangle J now. So you're the hub for these 19 counties?
For these 19 counties for Project CARE specifically. And the CARE stands for Caregiver Alternatives to Running on Empty. So the idea is exactly what you said. Respite is something that so many primary care partners want and need in order to continue to provide care, but it's really hard to secure financially.
Mm-hmm. It's expensive.
It's prohibitive. Mm-hmm. It can also be hard to identify who's going to provide the care in a way that I am comfortable leaving my family member, my loved one, with them. So Project CARE, and we want folks to advocate not just for the same funding, but for additional funding, because it's flatly been funded since it started with the respite vouchers. But it is designed to provide short-term respite for families who are caring for someone living with dementia at home who requires 24/7 supervision to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not able to leave your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of Project CARE is while the funding is limited, it is what we would call consumer directed. So you get to decide, who is it that I want to hire? Is it an adult day? Is it an in-home agency? Is it my neighbor who is lovely, not medically trained, mm-hmm. but lovely and can do what I need them to do? There's flexibility to be able to hire exactly who's going to make the most sense for mm-hmm. you.
And it's been a little while, it's been a minute, as people say, since I've heard the particulars. It's a specific, isn't it like $500? It's a specific amount of money that literally it's handed to the care partner to decide the best way to spend?
Yeah, so it is the first voucher is it's $500, and depending on good job, it hasn't changed, and depending on additional funds, there's a possibility in some cases where there might be a second voucher available. And it is reimbursement. So yes, what happens is
you have to spend the money and then get reimbursed.
That's right. And there are some particulars. You don't have to spend the full $500 and before you can start being reimbursed. But it is reimbursement directly to that primary care partner.
All right. Yeah. And it has become wildly popular. I remember hearing about it first a bazillion years ago as this like pilot program that was started, and then it's now grown so much, and people, I'm going to geek out a little bit, is there data? Are people saying because they love it, it's so helpful? I mean, the fact that it keeps growing over all these years.
Well, I think anecdotally what I would say is that for some folks, what's most attractive about it is I get to choose mm-hmm. who I work with and how I schedule them. Whereas other respite programs, though they're limited, might assign you an agency and a certain number of hours, and you have a little less choice mm-hmm. in those circumstances. So I think what's most attractive is I feel like I'm in control. Am I going to use it all for a weekend of respite, or would I like to spread it out because it's not a lot of funds, we mm-hmm. recognize that. Am I going to spread it out in a way that's meaningful for me? So I think that is what has also helped with the program spread the word a little bit more.
I love that. And I remember thinking it wasn't in our area for a number of years. And now I just see it, you know, I see it referred to because I was doing all this legislative and I didn't realize it was in all 100 counties now. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so I remember what I was going to say about the support group. So a few days ago, I work privately through my All About Seniors group with families. And I made a list. There are 20 adult children I'm working with right now who are managing support and coordinating support for their parents. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that daughter's support group.
Yeah.
And I didn't think support group because, you know, I'm not a social worker. I thought cocktail party. And I talked to two of them. We met at a community when we were touring for both of their parents who have now moved in. And I said, oh my gosh, I wanted you to meet each other. I was thinking, I made a list of, it was hitting me, there's so many. Would you all want to like get together and have cocktails and just kind of share the experience? And they were like, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk to you offline about, I have all these families and they're just the validation and the support of what they're going through. I know, but the word support group, do you find any resistance of people saying, well, I don't have the time for it, or this doesn't mm-hmm. work, or mm-hmm. Or
the name makes a big difference.
What are you finding? I mean, clearly they're so popular, but do you ever see like it's never going to be enough? But what are you hearing from the folks?
I mean, some people are a little reluctant, and we encourage people to try, and we encourage them to try more than one support group, find one that feels like a good fit. And generally, people find them incredibly helpful. And support group is, it's not just touchy-feely mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. about emotions.
So what's the work around that word?
I don't know a workaround, but, you know, try it, you'll like it, and you'll learn, and people do come back because support groups, they do provide support, and I think it's great for people knowing that they're not alone. And
I think it's a perfectly good word. It's just, I don't know, because I'm not a social worker, I didn't want to use the term in a sort of more, because I also look at it as having a little bit more of a therapeutic.
Right, and that's what I think. Well, people will see, like, I don't need that therapy. You
know? Right. Yeah, and we're definitely not a therapy group. A support group is different. So it does provide support. People can talk about their feelings, know they're not alone, but they can also get a lot of practical advice. You know, people exchange caregiving tips, the communication mm-hmm. tips, strategies about living well with dementia. And, you know, they really do learn from each other. And people often build a community through support groups. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of benefits. I'm a huge fan of support groups.
I love the support groups. I'm just trying to get this today's culture to be more receptive to uh-huh. it.
Mm-hmm. And also, most of our support groups right now are on Zoom. Mm. So it's
got that flexibility.
So it's got
also
the flexibility. And while we don't like it, people can mostly listen.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay to come. You're new, you're shy, and listen. Mm-hmm. And I think it feels a little bit less exposed on mm-hmm. Zoom mm-hmm. than
that's
showing up.
Mm-hmm.
We do also still have a couple of support groups that meet face-to-face because for some people that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Also the logistical challenges. I mean, clearly everyone, there's so much that had to go on Zoom during the pandemic, mm-hmm. but then I would think it'd be easier for folks for whom, like going back to Project Care, I'm not able to leave my loved one, and so it would cost me a lot of money to be able to arrange to participate.
Right.
So Zoom could, I could see.
Or they can't get away from work to attend the daughter's group, but they can, take a lunch break and join us, you know, from work. So we polled our groups as the pandemic was lessening, and people primarily wanted to remain on Zoom.
Hmm. I could see that. So I was just thinking about the three things when I'm working with caregivers that when they're feeling extra vulnerable that are welcome. And so tell me if you find this too. The three things that, it's probably a lot more, but just three things that popped in. Swearing, mm-hmm. Expletives, like this is, you know, this is crazy, you know, so I'm not doing the swears because of FCC rules, but I find that when I'm talking with folks, and I don't know if you see it in your support groups, they want to be able to use the most expressive words and letting them know it's okay to swear, like, it is effing crazy, you know, those things, swearing, humor, laughing about a lot of the craziness that can come with it or the challenges, and then crying.
Yeah.
I was going to change my business card to say, I'm the place people come to cry. And I don't know if you have that too, but that just basically raw emotion, welcome. And do you see that with the support groups, that people need that safe space to be raw? Sure.
Absolutely.
And angry.
Yeah, and people say things in support groups that they would never say anywhere else. Like, I've heard people might talk about wishing their parent would die. And people in the support group are nodding their heads because they get it. But if they said that to their coworkers, their coworkers would think they were an awful person because they don't get it.
They don't get it until they get it.
Right.
And I know for me it was professional and academic and all this. But then when it became personal, when I meet other personal caregivers, there's like a, you know, you just look in the eye and you just know, especially there's a lot of graphicness to caregiving. And I also try to let folks know, and I think non-caregivers are not prepared for it. I have all kinds of articles I'm going to write or blogs, and one of them is, are you prepared to see your parents naked? You know, and so when I meet other caregivers and I can see that they're, and I was like, look, it's like after you have your babies and you meet other people who've had babies, you're like, all right, let's really talk about what happened. So all right, so that was the support group that I was thinking of recently, but I was calling it more of a cocktail party in my mind.
But to your question about support group, the language not necessarily drawing folks in, I think about it more as a connection. Like, do you want to connect with other caregivers, care partners? And if so, we call it a support group, but it's just a way for you to have that connection and community. And we have had folks that, you know, you're on Zoom, and so they're using the chat box, you know, maybe more one-on-one, and they're connecting with, sharing information and connecting offline. Or our daughter's group meets in person quarterly, and you just see folks having those side conversations, and you know, you've made a connection.
And they're doing the reactions.
That's right.
Or, and you know, the that's little reaction, the snaps.
Right, and that's, I think that's where we are as a culture. I look at that because, just like a girl was telling me, the senior games. She said, I'd like to do the senior games, but they should name them something else, you know, because they don't want to do it because it says
she doesn't like the word seniors.
And just like support group. I'm not doing support group. It sounds like I'm need therapy.
Yeah.
But connecting.
Yeah.
You know, I'll connect.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the saddest things I do is I try to stay off Facebook, but every once in a while I go on Facebook, and I did join the ARP's caregiver Facebook. It's a private Facebook group, but it's a private group with thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And that is the rawest. That's where people really vent. And they can post, sorry, I'm hitting my microphone. They can really, they can post anonymously, and that's where people let it all out.
Yeah.
And it just shows the intensity that's out there. And so I love that you are actual people, that you don't have to be strangers, that you post online, that you're there. All right, so a few other things we want to talk about. So we talked about your support group. We talked about your respite support. There's also like an artsy flair thing. One of the things you told me about, that you were very good to tell me about, make sure you ask about. So I was supposed to ask about, Bobby, the Nasher Art Museum initiative. Tell us about that.
We piloted a program with the Nasher Museum of Art at Duke in 2014 or 2015. It's an art, and it's still going on today, but it's an art program that's modeled after Meet Me at MoMA, which is a program at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And what it is, it's a program that we do once a month. We have a morning session or an afternoon session, and people living with dementia attend with their family care partner, and there is usually a 45 to 60 minute art tour of a theme. It might be portraits, it might be color, different themes each month. And then after the tour, there's a 30 minute either hands-on art making activity or a 30 minute music program, and they're tied to the theme of the art. And it's wonderful.
That.
And like, you know, Natalie used the word safe space. People can, you know, feel comfortable that, you know, they're not going to say anything wrong. It's a wonderful program, and we've really enjoyed the partnership that we've had with the Nasher for these many years. And for folks who want to look at it, it's called Reflections. That's what they call the tour.
Nice.
And it's free. People get into the museum for free. The program is free. Parking is made free.
I love all
of it. Is it going to be throughout the country, or are they going to be big like that?
I think that there are going programs at many museums. I don't know if they all look exactly like this. Mm-hmm. I had a phone call. I don't know if I should even say this, but
definitely say it. If the answer, if the question is, should I? The answer is
bring the
yes
noise box
on our
out.
Show.
With
wait,
a
minute, say it.
Wait. Oh, that's not a good one. I don't know the do. I was looking for that. Okay.
Well.
Okay, now you can see.
I had a phone call with somebody from the Frank Art Gallery this week, and they are considering starting an art monthly art program for people living with dementia and their care partners. So I think there's growing interest.
Growing. Yes, do that. We want them to do it.
Wow.
All right. So I'm already excited for our second program when Natalie and Bobby come back.
That's right.
Because what we're doing right now is, I think, doing big picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there was a whole series of things that we want to talk about that really get into the specifics, like how can someone handle this?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a few minutes left. So what I thought we could do is, and you were so great, both of you, to give a list of the type of challenging issues that care partners and individuals focus on and need help with. So let's get through some of them, but I'm already inviting you to come back so we can do and listeners, go ahead and email me any questions and we can go through and just kind of do a deeper dive in the future. But some of the issues that I know, one of them, Bobby, I think this is more your world that you like to talk about, the big picture of when people use these words, when they bring Alzheimer's versus dementia versus, and then we know, frontal temporal dementia, Lewy body, Parkinson's, how do you kind of talk about the differences?
Yeah, well, people tend to use the words dementia and Alzheimer's interchangeably, but they're not the same. Dementia is a general term. I guess I'm on the radio, so you can't see my hands.
Yes, we're talking with our hands, people, which is why I keep hitting my microphone.
But dementia is a general term to describe a set of symptoms that affect cognitive abilities, memory, thinking, and behavior. It's not a specific disease, but rather an umbrella term for a group of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then there's Alzheimer's disease, and that is the most common cause of dementia. I think it accounts for somewhere between 60% and 80% of all cases of dementia. And Alzheimer's is a progressive neurodegenerative disorder that primarily affects memory and cognitive functions. And it's one of hundreds of causes of dementia. And Heather, you rattled off many of the other common ones already.
I've heard folks say it matters and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It matters in that you kind of want to know because you medicate things differently. It might have a slightly different way of presenting itself or trajectories, you know, if someone has a more vascular, different kind of medicines. That's how I hear about it. But then in the big picture, and what I want to turn to is, it matters and then it doesn't matter, because some of the basic techniques of creating joy and meaning and working with someone, I think that doesn't differ, right, with dementia. So one of the things I'm trying to think for the next few minutes, just some general tips. I know, Natalie, we were going to talk about like communicating for folks who are living with brain change and someone who has dementia. What are some just tips you want people to be able to take away when it comes to communication?
Yeah. Well, first I would say we won't be able to do it justice. That's a show in and of itself, right?
It is.
Our website, Caregiver, under the Caregiver Connections tab, in December of 2020, we hosted a webinar on communication. Our colleague Cornelia Poor did a presentation on communication. So I would encourage folks to check that out. I think communication is one of the best strategies that we have for connecting with our loved one who's having memory changes. So first, it's observing the ways that we notice that their communication is shifting, and then also considering how we are communicating and asking ourselves, is it working anymore? Does it seem to be yielding the fruit that I'd like it to? So sort of some quick an overview of some ideas. One would be to consider that logic and reasoning, depending on where my loved one might be in this process, logic and reasoning may not be as effective as it once was, right? So historically, maybe it brought us to the same page and got us aligned, but now it might just create agitation and anxiety.
Logic and reasoning, like, it's raining outside, put your jacket, or like what?
Logic and reasoning that says, because you are doing this, we need to do this, right? So I don't need my coat, like, I'll be fine in the rain, or, you know, but more of an angle of, it would really just help me if you would, could you, it would help me if you would wear your coat, or I feel like it might get cold, can you put on your coat, versus, you know, when we're saying what is true to them, but because of the changes that are happening in their brain, they're not able to connect with that. And so our goal, right, the sort of what we're using to measure is our communication strategy working is, does it, in the moment, relieve some of the anxiety, some of the agitation that we might be feeling? That's how we know it's working. It's not about making sure they have all the facts.
It's not about being right, right? Like, I'm going to help them remember
That's
this. But no, it's about having peace and calm not starting a fight.
And usually the "you need my help" is not the way to start, right? Because then you have to convince
Or don't
me.
You remember?
Yes, don't you remember?
Yeah. Or you haven't done that. I've seen people fight. All right, so when I'm making a list. So you're going to come back and we're going to talk about a lot more complications and really do a deep dive. And hopefully we'll have you back on soon. It'll take a few months, but we'll have you back on. But for our listeners now, where can they find out more? How do they find out and get connected with the Duke family? Dementia Family Support
Program. It's a mouthful, right?
It is.
Well, for a while we were Duke Family Support. Then we needed to remind folks that we work with dementia. So we added the dementia part. So one, you do not need a referral. Folks are able to reach out directly. You can call our main line at 919-660-7510 or our website, DukeFamilySupport.org, which also has all of our information. You can email, our email is there, phone numbers listed there, staff contacts are all available on the website as well.
And what I'll do is when I post this, listeners, I will post it with your website, DukeFamilySupport.org.
Yes.
So I will post your picture and this recording and the website. And I am making a note of where we stopped so that way when we come back on, listeners, we'll give you a little teaser. We're going to talk all about other behaviors that can be challenging, driving, when I want to talk about when it's time to help someone allow help to come into the home, or even thinking about moving and making a move more successful. So there's a lot we'll talk about off air, but on air, I need to thank Natalie Leary and Bobby Matcher from the Duke Dementia Family Support Program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. Thank you. Thank you, friend. Thank you, WCOM, LP Chapel Hill, Carrboro, for having us in this station for just a few more weeks. I don't know when we're moving to our new studio, but soon.
Yeah.
And as always, Orange County Department on Aging folks, if you're listening, thank you so much for sponsoring our show. And listeners, thank you for joining us, and we'll be on next week. Thank you.